I'm Rick Moore, and this is Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore, brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, and by the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region. All right, really happy now to welcome back Taylor Ann Bradford, who's been on vacation for a bit here. And Taylor Ann, welcome back. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much for having me. I'm glad to be back. I was in the sunny state of California, and I have to say that I truly missed Cape Ann, because one thing that Southern California does not have on Cape Ann is green. It's desert. It's brown. It's dry. There's no rain. So coming back to rainfall and lots of luscious forests is a wonderful way to return.
Well, you certainly came back to rainfall, that's for sure. So you got that much. And I know I'm looking forward to talking about your upcoming column in a little while, because you are such an active young person to be able to do all the things you do is fascinating. And you do have a lot of opportunity here living on the North Shore and on Cape Ann in particular. But we'll get to that later. You obviously jumped back into work with both feet, and a lot going on. But before we check out today's headlines, I'd like to go back on the latest updates on what's going on with the new school over, where is it, over in Veterans Memorial, just off of 128. There's a lot of discussion among my folk and a lot of teachers, of former teachers and present teachers. We want the best for the kids. You want new schools and so on, but it just seems like this is not the best place for it, although that's where it's going to be built, and that there was lost opportunity in the past. But we're not going to get into that. We're going to get into your latest updates. So bring me up to speed, please, Taylor.
Yeah, so while I was away last week, our reporter Julie Manganis took the reins on the controversial topic of the school building over at 11 Webster Street. If you guys remember, the some residents had filed a lawsuit against the three entities, which is the MSBA, the State's Office of Energy and Environmental Affairs, and the city, over school consolidation irregularities, open space access, and environmental injustice as Gloucester seeks to build that new elementary school on the site of Meadows Field on 11 Webster Street. So they filed this lawsuit, and, you know, it had a couple different narratives to it, but the most recent one was last week an Essex County Superior Court judge appeared poised Thursday, that last Thursday, to throw out at least part of the lawsuit brought by the group of residents who opposed the construction of an elementary school on Meadows Field on Webster Street. And so Judge Thomas Dressler kind of told the attorneys and plaintiffs that just because you can file a lawsuit doesn't mean you should, kind of referencing that it might not have been the best idea for these residents to do it, as there's a couple intense exchanges between the attorneys and Dressler's, as he, you know, called out both procedural errors and what he just suggested was misrepresentation by the plaintiffs of what the law actually requires the city to do. And so that, I think, kind of starts the narrative, which isn't always, you know, it's quite rocky, and it shows that there's a lot of discussions about, you know, what the city and what the school district have done to make this school a possibility, and just when residents are upset for how it's been done, you know, they're pointing out ways in which they think that it's against the law, but it seems to, as this judge has pointed out, that the school and the district have really, you know, crossed their T's and dotted their I's in a lot of ways. And, you know, one of the biggest things is, you know, during that hearing that took place last Thursday, the plaintiffs, the residents, were forced to acknowledge that some of the allegations in their complaint were based on either issues that have now been addressed by the city or their legal errors. And so there's a lot of, in a story that we have on our article, a little bit more in depth about what happened at that hearing. But kind of the latest is that the judge took the matter under advisement, but he said that he expects to decide soon whether to grant the city's request to dismiss the case pretty soon. So the city had, you know, requested a summary of judgment and a request for the judge to dismiss the case based on a couple of different grounds. And, you know, after having this hearing to hear both sides and kind of hear a little bit more about what's going on and how things are up to snuff, he'll make a decision quite soon about whether or not this case will go forward. But, you know, based off of this article and based off of last week, it doesn't look like it's going to fall in the residents' favor, but only time will tell.
Yeah, and, you know, there's also the political aspect, which does not relate really to the legal aspect. And so it's the legal aspect that, you know, that was being contended. And obviously, you know, somebody maybe didn't do their homework, or it just wasn't that serious, you know, a charge. And the thing that I know I've been reading about, there were a couple of concerns. One was Meadows Field itself, in that it was you know, sort of a sacred space for a lot of people in town. Mm. And then also the concern for traffic, because and in fact, I got to tell you, go back, I don't know, 100 years ago, when the 128 extension was built, there was that same concern about traffic, and it was the same concern about traffic up at Blackburn Circle, where all the, you know, where the Fuller School used to be, and you got all those apartments up there now. So it seems to be that those are the two points of contention, weren't they? The field itself, and then traffic issues?
Correct, yeah. So Meadows Field itself, you know, it was dedicated to Joseph Meadows, and a lot of people were really passionate about preserving that dedication and that ball field. Also, I think to note about Meadows Field is that the softball teams throughout the years have really rallied and made that a home base, and also have raised a lot of money for, you know, the reconstruction and revigoration of that field, you know, bringing new lights in. They've really put a lot of effort into that field over the years. So, I mean, I'm not surprised that they're really upset to see all this hard work go away. Now, the city did say that they will put money and create a new ball field somewhere else with amenities very similar to those that are at Meadows Field. But again, I think it's, you know, when you've worked really hard on one painting, for someone to say that they're going to wipe that, you know, painting clean and make one that's almost a relic of it, it's not quite the same for those who have been so close to the narrative. So that's one of it. And then you're right, the traffic has been something. I mean, whether you talk about the school problem or not, you know, traffic on Eastern Ave is horrendous at times. And we've seen, you know, even recently a lot of car accidents there. You know, trucks are going along that road when they shouldn't be. And so the question is, you know, if it's this, that, now, what's it going to be like in the school year? And so that is a big question and a big discussion. And there's been lots of things to talk about when it comes to traffic here in the city, not just in relation to the school. And I think it's something that's always going to be a discussion. I mean, that's why the city has a traffic commission. And so I guess we'll just have to wait and see and how they continue to discuss this. They did do a traffic report, a traffic study, to kind of see, you know, is this the safest? And, you know, you've heard people on both sides whether or not it's the smart decision to have the school there. Mm. And some, you know, officials have even said, you know, it's not the right place to have it, but it's what we had to do. And it's where, you know, the island is only so big. And so that'll be interesting, I think, especially as they start construction. And something a resident brought up to me the other day was, you know, the trucks, we're going to see there's a lot of trucks going down that area right now, but when construction comes, there's also going to be a lot of trucks coming that way as well. So I think we'll see a lot of traffic build up in the near future, not just with the start of school at that new site.
You know what I'm curious about, and this isn't a question really, it's just kind of a thinking out loud here, is when you buy a house, when you're a homeowner, you have certain things you have to do to get the home in shape, or unless you buy a brand new one. And then when you get the brand new one, or you get everything in shape, then you realize, okay, certain things are going to wear out, you know, at a certain time. And you sort of make that part of your overall planning for the future. And I'm wondering, in cities, and again, just thinking out loud, Taylor, in cities such as Gloucester, is there a plan? Do people take a look and realize, okay, this school is 100 years old, that school is 100 years old, this one's 90 years old, we're going to have to replace the police building, this, that, and the other thing over the next 100 years? I wonder if there's any planning for that, because in my lifetime, you know, we've seen the reconstruction of Gloucester High School, which, in my opinion, was a disaster, and we've seen the building of a new school over at West Parish. And these things bring up, I don't know what you call them, but brand new burdens on the city in terms of budget. So, you know, I'm just curious to see. Maybe I'll ask the mayor that when I get a chance to see her. But have you had any experience with that? You know what I'm talking about? They usually talk about a 5-year plan or something like that. But it seems to me with a municipality, you need kind of more long-range planning than 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, and I mean, the question that you raise is a very valid one, and they have talked about how, you know, the consolidation of East Gloucester and Veterans is just a part of the puzzle. Again, you know, they had Gloucester's renovations, you know, they had the new building at West Parish. Now they have this consolidation school, and they did say, and I apologize, I don't remember the names of the other schools that they're planning to be a part of this timeline, but they are planning to renovate or rebuild the other schools here in the district after the consolidation of Veterans and East Gloucester. So I know this is not the last school within their timeline to rebuild or to be renovated. You know, I guess it's just a matter of timing and funds. And yeah. I mean, I just have to say, you know, despite all the controversy and the going back and forth, I can't imagine all the work that goes behind the scenes in any of this. It's just so many moving parts.
Well, yeah.
You're right. You know, you're right. Within it all, though, it is the question of when will we be done construction? And I Gloucester is an old city, you know. Governor Baker and even the mayor said that yesterday at a press conference. Gloucester is an old city, and there are a lot of old parts that need to be renovated. And, you know, as we enter into the 21st, 22nd century, we're having to deal with all of it now. And the hope is that we do it right, and so we can, you know, deal with everything, again, 100 years from now, not now.
Great segue into the next segment. So tell me a little bit about your experience covering the governor yesterday.
Yeah, oh, one other thing before we go to that, I just want to note, too, that the school leaders did have an update, and so for those of you listening that are wondering about the timeline for the new school construction and wondering if you can play on Meadows Field, they did announce that Meadows Field will be closed physically to the public starting next week. They're going to be erecting a construction fence, and so that's kind of the barrier between the public and the field. So just want to put that out there for those of you listening and are curious. You know, all softball games have been rearranged to go to different places. So just want to note that. But yes, to get to what happened yesterday, Governor Baker, has seemed to be coming to Gloucester quite a lot lately. He came to announce, some news about COVID a couple months ago, and now he's back, but this time not necessarily about COVID, although I know that the outside, out of towner reporters definitely wanted to hear COVID updates. He was pretty insistent to not talk about COVID, but necessarily to talk about really the great work and collaboration of the entire Commonwealth when it comes to you know, dam and coastal infrastructure projects. And he awarded over $17 million for 32 projects of this scope to 28 across 28 communities and towns within the Commonwealth as a part of the state's dam and seawall program. So he, along with other state and local officials, went to Haskell Pond Reservoir, which is one of my favorite places to run and climb. So that was like a fun little slice to be able to, you know, go on assignment to one of the great places here in Gloucester. But they made the announcement that, you know, this award would be going to all of these different communities. And for Gloucester, it means quite a bit of money is coming into the city for the effort to preserve and restore dams here in the city. As again, like I said earlier, Gloucester is an older community, and which means our infrastructure isn't always up to code, or, you know, up to the standards that we in the 21st century have. And so Governor Baker announced that Gloucester would be getting $63,300 for the design and permitting of the Haskell Pond Dam storm and seismic improvements, and then $1 million for construction of that dam, and then another a little bit over $2 million for the construction of flood mitigation barriers at Gloucester High School. If you remember a couple of years ago, we had quite the flood over there. And so it's opportunity to sing praises of all the different people who are part of this. You know, this was the community development department. This was the DPW, this was the mayor's office, this was the state, you know, everyone coming together and saying, you know, there's a problem and we need to fix it. And so really exciting, and this isn't the first time that these projects have received funding from this program, the state program. I mean, Haskell Pond Dam was built in 1902, so go figure that it needs a little bit of a facelift now. It's 43 feet high, which is 480 feet. It's beautiful. And, you know, we received $1 million for the project back in January for the second phase of this entire $7 million project. And it's something to celebrate. And even Governor Baker said, you know, he said, like, these grants will help the different communities make substantial progress to maintain and repair aging dams and seawalls. For Gloucester, this is huge because those dams and dikes, you know, hold 30% of the city's drinking water. So if those were to collapse, not only are you going to see flooding, but you're also going to see huge problems with drinking water. And, you know, for multiple reasons, no one wants to have to deal with the potential drought or, you know, purchasing of plastic bottles in order to drink fresh water. And so that's exciting news, I think, here. And the mayor said it best yesterday. She said, I don't want to be flooded out and I don't want to be without water. And so what does that mean? It means, you know, we have to work together to keep these ponds and reservoirs alive and sustainable and keep checking in on them, because that's one thing is the fear that, you know, like we see with other projects like the Fuller School, where, you know, the infrastructure just gets left alone and decrepit and then it has to be demolished. And that's not what they want to do with these things such as Haskell Pond. It's also important to note that nearby communities also received grants for other coastal construction projects, such as Essex, who received $1 million, a little bit over $1 million for the construction of and the renovations of the Conomo Point seawall, which saw damage in 2018. And then we also saw projects being funded in Salem and Peabody and Ipswich as well. So exciting things. You know, the governor did note that, you know, as CDC came out with COVID guidelines or suggestions, that his team is working on, you know, coming up with a plan for the state, but he really, really emphasized that he was not going to speak much about those things at this press conference. It really was truly to focus on the dams and the projects that the city and the state have been working on behind the scenes in the midst of, again, we're still in the pandemic, so still navigating that as well. So I don't know how they are able to work, eat, and sleep. You know, all within 24 hours, but they get the job done, and it's exciting to see, and I'm excited to see this Haskell Pond project come to a close. You know, maybe it's a couple of years from now, but it seems like they're getting the funding to continue onward.
Excellent, excellent coverage, Taylor Ann. Thank you. I want to make note and let you know that we had a biology and a marine biology teacher. She taught both. Back in the 90s, she did a study, and she had verification, or at least she prognosticated, that the canal, the Blinman Canal, would eventually, in sometime during this century, the 21st century here, would be flooding the science wing, the bottom floor of the science wing at the high school. And we're just about there, so it's nice to hear that they're doing something about trying to prevent that. And it was it's funny, she was scoffed at, I remember, back in the 90s, when it was Rosemary Banks. She did a great job, and here we are. It's already begun, and it's only 2021. Great coverage, and you talked about the outdoors, which you always do on Friday. So what's coming up in your column this week?
Yeah, so I'll be writing about the Ipswich River watershed, which I know is not in Cape Ann, but it's a neighboring community that I just find is a little slice of heaven. And I've been a longtime member of the Ipswich River watershed and just have come to really appreciate that the water and the wildlife and the trails that the people over there have worked so hard to maintain and preserve. And just wanted to give them a shout out and also to just kind of let people know of this access that I don't think a lot of people know about. There's incredible trails over in that neck of the woods, but also there is great paddling. And if you are a member, there's, you know, you donate some money for the year and then you're able to access their kayaks and canoes all year round, which I just think is the greatest thing ever. Especially for someone like myself who, you know, I'm younger, I don't have a lot of, you know, big ticket items. I don't own a house. I can't always fit a lot of things into my apartment. I would love to kayak and canoe, but I can't store one at my house. I can't purchase one. And so the fact that I can be able to use these, for the small price of, you know, whatever the donations are, that goes into restoring and keeping this watershed alive, I think it's just such a great opportunity. And along with that, you'll be surprised at what you can see. I went yesterday to be able to just kind of paddle after work, and I saw otters, I saw a bald eagle, and I saw a deer. And that's all within 1 hour of paddling this really quiet river. And so I think you'll just see a lot of beautiful wildlife that has called this watershed home for so long, and it's a great spot, and you'll always be surprised. And it's a great way to cool off too. It's so hot and muggy these days, so being able to explore and see the wildlife, and you know, the paddle can either take you into downtown Ipswich or you know up south towards Reading, and I think that's so cool that this river just extends so much of the North Shore and the community of Commonwealth. So going to write about that. I feel like I just told you the entire article right there, but it's a great one. And
it'll be even better in writing to look at, believe me. I know that.
Yeah, so it'll be great. But that's the trail that I'll be covering. It's both a trail and a paddle, and I hope people explore it because it's one of my favorites.
All right, that's Gloucester Times journalist Taylor Ann Bradford. With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore. This has been Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore. Brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire. By the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region. Connect with Connections by emailing msonewsports@gmail.com.